Welcome back, everyone. Thank you, as always, from Craig and myself for joining us. We are here recording on the 12th of March, 2024, Podchat Live, episode 117. Another week has passed, Craig. We've got another load of stuff that has caught our eye. Got quite a bit to get through this week, haven't we?
We have a lot to get through every week.
We do. And actually, not a lot. A lot of the things we talk about in the week, we end up not making the cut because we find more exciting things to talk about. But that's just the way it goes. You can't talk about everything. Actually, I was talking to a student this week. A student was messaging me and sort of said, "Do you know of any resources that can help me keep up to date with research? I just find it a bit overwhelming keeping up to date with papers that come out. I don't know where to find them. I don't always have access to them. If I read them, I don't even necessarily always understand them. I just wish there was somewhere where, someone could just tell me the two or three kind of most interesting or relevant papers that week." And I thought it was a wind up at first, but it wasn't. It was someone kind of who didn't know about our podcast at all. So I rather shamelessly sort of said, "Well, yeah, that's kind of what we do. Please do share it with all your student friends." So I know that you and I feel very strongly about not spamming all the social media platforms and forums with our podcast every week when it comes out. We don't like that behavior. But maybe we should do a bit more, I think, because there's lots of students out there that evidently have no idea of what we're doing, and maybe they would find it helpful or useful or interesting. So maybe a bit more spamming.
I come across people like that all the time. I think, shame on you. We've been doing this for how many years now?
I know, but it's probably our
But
fault. We aren't shouting about it enough because we don't like to. If other people would like to shout about us, please feel free because that takes the pressure off us. But anyway, I'm rambling. Let's start talking about some of the things that have caught our eye this week. Before we do, as has become customary, some shoe facts, Craig. It's been a busy week in the shoe space, as always.
The big news that came through this morning was the CEO of Brooks is stepping down, Jim Webber, which is interesting. So I haven't had a chance to read about that. But since last week, I've come across three new brands of running shoes, and two of them in particular caught my eye, mainly because they were actually manufacturers of running clothing and they ventured into the running shoe space. One being Ron Hill, which is largely UK based. Some people may know Ron Hill, who I understand passed away a year or so ago, very famous marathon runner. So they have long had a range of running clothing, and they've now got a shoe range, which I'll link to. And the other one is TYR, which are again USA based, again a clothing manufacturer for runners, men's and women, and they have branched out into running shoes. And one of their shoes in particular, actually, it quite caught my eye. They call it the Valkyrie Elite Carbon Runner. It actually looks good, but not only does it look good, I have actually seen it. It's obviously not available here in Australia, but it's getting some really positive reviews from a lot of the established running shoe reviewers. So the kind of people whose reviews I actually respect and like. So this could be one of those shoes to watch the space.
Great. We'll link to those as always because we know that people are, well, some people anyway, some of our listeners are as nerdy about shoes as we are. So it's good to know these updates. Right. So before we start with our articles, let me continue a little mini rant that I had on social media this week. Rant's too strong a word. I don't take social media that seriously anymore. I've got too bored by it, really. But I saw a post on Instagram by an account called Running Peak. So that's running underscore peak, PEAK. Not a small account, 567,000 followers. I wasn't aware of it before I came across this post. And it was a post of the Tokyo Marathon. Well, it was a series of photos, just still photos, of Yasuki Nishiyama. Who was the fastest Japanese runner at the Tokyo Marathon last weekend? He finished in ninth place with a time of 2:06:31. So he wasn't hanging around. And a photo was put up of him sort of just entering initial contact on his right side. and his foot was in quite an inverted position. And it's a still photo, so that's really all we can say. There was no video attached to it. All we could really say is he was just at initial contact on the right side. His foot was in an inverted position. Might have been a misstep. Don't know. I've never seen him run before. We've been looking, Craig and I have been looking for video. We can't find any. Might just be the way his tibial varum presents his foot to the ground. It certainly had no context whatsoever. But did that stop the armchair quarterbacks from getting involved? Oh my goodness, no. Over 22,000 likes on this post. Well, in the 400 or so comments, and those comments were wild. Did you see some of them, Craig?
Oh, I did. Yeah, it was bizarre. Like, yeah, the very first comment here now from 2 days ago, this is why there are more hyperextension injuries than ever, from the
I
carbon
mean,
shoe.
we had people associating it with pain when clearly he wasn't in pain. We had people associating it with future problems. I mean, this guy's just finished ninth in a marathon major. People talking about what was happening movement wise when it was a photo. We don't know what was happening movement wise. Some people saying this is over supination. Some people saying this is over pronation. It was utter madness. So I had some fun with it on Instagram, but it just reminded me there's over 500,000 followers on this clearly quite large running account, and here we are, the internet expert era.
Actually, I might just slightly correct one thing you did say. You said his foot hitting the ground in a very inverted position. It probably is, but it's really the shoe is very inverted.
Well, you're quite right. Absolutely. You're
And
yeah, well done.
I suspect the foot inside that shoe is probably not as bad. But
No, you're quite
I
right to call me
look,
on that. Yep, no, thank you for doing so.
I've been so tempted to respond in the thread, but I every time I tend to respond to these sorts of things, you get hate mail. But he can run a marathon faster than everyone else commenting on that thread.
100%. Yeah, there were. I mean, there were only eight people faster than him on the day. We will try and find some photo, some video of him because I don't know him. I might reach out to people that are really more knowledgeable about this than me. I might reach out to Nitta, for example, and TDC, because they probably know of him and they've probably seen him run. Maybe it's his style. I don't know. But yeah, just absolutely wild. I sort of equally encourage people and discourage people from going on and looking at the comments in equal measure because it's sort of fun, but it's sort of not fun. You've been warned. Okay, on with the articles that we've noticed in the last week, just the ones that sort of caught our eye. First off was an article that was published in the Physiotherapy Theory and Practice Journal. This was a group of researchers. It appeared to be a collaboration between a group of researchers in India and a group of researchers in Saudi Arabia. And it is titled Effects of Physical Interventions on Pain and Disability in Chronic Low Back Pain with Pronated Feet, a systematic review and meta-analysis. Full disclosure here, and this is really rare with my university access because it's really quite broad. I can't get access to this paper. I have tried in multiple different ways, both legal and perhaps not so legal, etc. And I just cannot get hold of the full text. So all I'm really reading here is the abstract. Craig, have you managed to read the full text?
No, I haven't been able to get it either. I
Couldn't
did
get it.
try.
Okay, so we'll link to it, and if anyone can get the full text, we would love it if you would email us a copy. That would be marvelous. They essentially found four studies totaling 268 patients to put through this systematic review. So quite a small review and meta-analysis. Two of the studies were looking at. So when they're talking about physical interventions for chronic low back pain. Two of these studies were referring to custom-made foot orthoses, and two of them were referring to exercises. Their conclusion was that physical interventions, specifically targeting pronated feet, will significantly alleviate pain and reduce disability in patients who've got lower back pain and pronated feet. Now, I don't know whether that is a reasonable conclusion. I'm not even sure about the sort of theoretical construct of kind of associating low back pain with pronated feet. I know there's different debates about that. Craig, we haven't read the paper, so we can't really speak to it. But what were your thoughts when you read the abstract?
I was immediately not impressed.
Feels a bit of a stretch, doesn't it?
I don't know what four studies they're talking about. I know of about 10 studies the four could have been drawn from, but individually, none of those 10 or so studies I'm talking about stack up to scrutiny. There was either inadequate control group, there was not blinding, like there was no. So I suspect, I mean, I'll reserve judgment finally until I see which four they did and their reason for including them or and excluding the others. But I'm not aware of really any studies of foot orthoses and low back pain that on its own stack up to closer scrutiny.
No, it's a strange
You
space,
know,
isn't
they
it?
might have, they might have compared custom made to pre-made, but there was no control group. So you didn't know if those symptoms in the back were going to improve anyway. And we know generally low back pain does get better with time. So I would have to, yeah, I'll reserve judgment on that one.
And you obviously low back pain being so complex and multifactorial and having strong psychosocial contributions, it's never just mechanical. I found it interesting when they said in the abstract that the two studies that were looking at foot orthoses compared custom-made foot orthoses to non-biomechanical foot orthoses. Totally intrigued as to what they were. So I can't wait to get my hands on the paper and get into the weeds on that. But yeah, we'll flag it for people.
Yeah, that non-biomechanical, I think there is one study I'm aware of that just used flat insoles and versus custom made. But participants obviously wouldn't have been blind or anything like that. So you can't draw the strength of the conclusion that they drew based on
No,
that.
no. Right. So we would love it if anyone has that paper to send it to us so we can get into it in a bit more detail. But it'd been published in the last week. We found it of interest, so we thought we would flag it for people. We'll link to it. Next up, this was published on the 6th of March. So where are we today? What's today? The 12th. So that was just about 6 days ago. This one is open access and it is in Sports Medicine. So a nice, meaty, high impact factor journal. It's from Bas van Horen, who's in the Netherlands, and a group of other researchers, including our friend of the show, Izzy Moore, who I think we mentioned a couple of weeks ago. She's had a few publications recently. Titled The Relationship Between Running Biomechanics and Running Economy, Systematic Review and Meta-Analysis of Observational Studies. So really big bit of work, this one, essentially aiming to try and determine what associations there are or there aren't between your running biomechanics and your running economy. This one was a bit bigger, 51 studies in this analysis, and that totaled around about 1,115 runners. So I'll just run through some of the key findings because it's fairly vast, and I think these are probably the big highlights, if you like. So first off, most spatiotemporal outcomes, so things like contact time, flight time, stride length, had trivial and non-significant associations with running economy. Secondly, a higher step frequency has a small but significant association with better running economy. So possible implications there for runners increasing their step frequency, so how many steps they take, to improve their running economy. Thirdly, increased leg stiffness is associated to improve running economy. So things that we can do to make legs stiffer, like plyometrics, maybe of value to running economy. And lastly, but perhaps I think one of the most interesting conclusions, given the discussions that we've had over the last 15 years, foot strike patterns are not associated with running economy. And that's just that whether you're a heel striker, a midfoot, a 4 foot striker, it just dominated the discussion, hasn't it, over recent decades.
And how good was it to see that?
Well, no surprise, but the reality is, the take home here is that there is no one way to run. One way is not superior. That shouldn't surprise anyone that's listening. That isn't a massively new statement, but a lovely, lovely big bit of science here, Craig.
Oh, yeah. I think if anyone wants an example of how you should do a systematic review and meta-analysis, this is how you do it. This is thorough. This is comprehensive. This is a major piece of work. And I assume the first author is the one that did all the legwork. So congratulations to him on that. But I think that the couple of take homes for me, one was I was a little surprised that contact time wasn't associated with running economy because the assumption is that the shorter time you're in contact with the ground, that you're moving forward faster. So that's was a little surprised. The one on cadence was, I think, was a good finding because We know this trend to patellofemoral pain and some other injuries, to shorten the stride length, turn the legs over quicker, has positive biomechanical effects for some injuries. So it's good to see that that is associated with better running economy. But obviously, I'm not surprised that they found no difference between heel strike and forefoot strike. As you said, we've been through these debates. Of the individual studies that I haven't looked in detail what studies they included or didn't include. But if I was to go back over the literature the last 10 years, I think about a third of them have found forefoot striking more economical, a third have found heel striking more economical, and a third have found no difference. So when you pull the data, there's no difference. No systematic differences. That doesn't mean one might not be better for an individual or not. So to make those extravagant claims that one is better than the other systematically is just not supported. And I think we sort of knew that, and we knew that the evidence was going both ways over the last 10 years, and this is a quite a comprehensive review to combine them together. So I certainly recommend if people want to see what a good systematic review and meta-analysis looks like, this is a good opportunity to have a look at it. And it's open access.
Absolutely. And the other thing I would recommend is either taking a look at Izzy Moore's or Bas van Horen's, so that's last author and first author respectively. Take a look at either of their Twitter or X accounts, because they summarized it on Baz did a lovely sort of a thread, if you like, of posts summarizing the key findings. There's a couple of really nice images in the that he's pulled from the paper that just take a really big bit of work and say, look, if you want to get the kind of right into the kind of nuts and bolts of the main findings, here's what we found. So worth looking at his Twitter account as
I
well.
think if you for those who've got access to the paper, I'm just scrolling down now. I think it's figure eight.
Yeah, it's open access, so everyone
Which
should
was a
be able to
oh
get it. Yep.
yeah, figure eight is a beautiful graphic summary of all the findings.
Agree, agree. Right, lastly, little change of gears here, switch of lanes. But we like to keep our topics as diverse. Craig and I are always mindful that if we were left to our own devices, we'd just probably talk about running shoes and biomechanical studies all day long. But we know that's not how to win a bigger audience. So here we go. Hair thread tourniquet syndrome, two case reports and review of the literature. So this was published in the Turkish Journal of Plastic Surgery by a group of Turkish authors. It was published just a couple of days ago, but the date on it is April to June 2024. So I suspect it's published ahead of print and it's due for the next edition of the Turkish Journal of Plastic Surgery. It's open access, and it is just a short case report, so fairly low level evidence, but nonetheless, this one actually resonated with me a little bit, particularly case one. There are two cases here, but case one is of a 5-month-old baby, and there's a couple of photos in there which are worth looking at, where their fourth toe essentially was strangulated by one of their hairs or one of their parents' hairs, perhaps. And I mean, it got really bad really quickly. Interestingly, once the hair was removed and they'd been given some sort of systemic antibiotics, it also improved incredibly quickly by the sound of it. But I don't know about you, Craig, but I was terrified into looking out for this stuff when my boys were babies. I remember someone saying to me, "Oh, have you ever heard of this thing that babies can get where without knowing it, the mum or the dad, in my family's case, it'd just be mum because I've got no hair, of course. But the mum or the dad leans over to change the nappy and one of their hairs falls down because it can wrap around any appendage. So in my case, it could have been willies, it could have been toes, fingers. But I was told, I think it might have been my dear late mother that told me, whatever you do every day, just check their fingers and toes that there's no hairs wrapped around them." And I got a really unhealthy obsession with this. So when you sent me this paper through this week, it gave me post-traumatic stress. My boys are 8 and 10 now, so I don't need to worry quite so much, I don't think. But I was really terrified into this being a thing. I don't know whether that was just me or whether there's lots of people that got irrational fears about this.
No, look, you come across two, three case reports a year on this. Like there is quite a long thread on Podiatry Arena with all those case reports in it. So it keeps popping up time and time again. I have actually seen one, like it's not that common. This was one a very long time ago, and the hair thread was around, say, the distal IP joint of the toe, and they actually came. It was, I think they're about 9, 10 months old, and they brought it in thinking it was an ingrown toenail. And I took one look at it and saw, well, no, it's not the nail. And I immediately sent them off with a note to the emergency department. You know, you're talking auto amputation if this is not dealt with, and systemic infection, and being very unwell if it's not dealt with quite urgently. One thing I do know, and again, I'm no surgeon, so if reading the case reports, and there is quite a bit of controversy in the literature about how to treat it. The actual surgical technique or under a local anaesthetic that should be used to get that hair out. So again, yeah, no, it's an interesting topic. It's always, like I said, comes up a few times every year and has been for quite some time.
Yeah, it would be good if any surgeons listening who have perhaps seen this and done it could get in touch, because in your mind, you sort of think, oh, well, a hair's wrapped around there. You just grab it and unwrap it. But it's more complicated than that, isn't it? This thing blows up like a sausage. It almost looks like a dactylitis, doesn't it? But the hair just then becomes completely invisible, just completely enveloped by all this swollen, inflamed tissue. So very much a case where a surgeon needs to get involved. But, yeah, I don't quite know what the process would be. It looks awful, though. And when I saw the photos on the paper that you sent through, this from the Turkish Journal of Plastic Surgery, it was exactly as awful as I'd been mentally told it would be. It was exactly it. All my fears came home to roost yet again. I had to have a little 5 minutes with myself. But yes, they are the main three articles.
Yeah, but actually, one thing that does pop up in some of the case reports is the child's been crying sort of at night for a week. You know, it takes them a while before they check the toe to see something wrong. You know, they're probably starting to get systemically unwell before it's even detected from an infection. Yeah. So,
well, I guess if you have a 5-month-old and they're crying a lot at night, well, guess what? That's just often what 5-month-olds do.
That's their job. That's what they're supposed to do. Yeah.
Exactly. But yeah, check those toes. Anyone out there with young children, check those toes, check those fingers. What marvelous. Let's wrap up. I feel like let me just check my stopwatch. Yes, we're at 22 minutes. Perfect. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. We really do appreciate it. Please do share us and shout about us. We're not really comfortable shouting about ourselves, so we'd love it if you would shout about us either in person or just don't have to shout, just tell people at work in the staff room, or if you're willing to post about us on social media, that would be great. Share our podcast, share our platforms, email us, get involved at podchatlive.com. Any questions, if you've got that paper that we referred to, surgeons that want to tell us about hair tourniquets, and we look forward to coming back next week for episode 118. Craig, it's been a pleasure. We'll speak next week.
Great, thanks. We'll see you next week.